Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Wesley Mission Victoria and broadcast through the Community Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and welcome to Australia's longest continual radio program that features the stories of older Australians. Listen to Older Voices. This week we start with part one of a three-part program featuring 84-year-old John Larson. Now, John was featured on Listen to Older Voices in June of 2014, where we learned of his life in Denmark and how it was that he came to be in Australia. But John, who's been a sailor for most of his life, has another story. He has travelled and lived in Antarctica. So over the three programs, we'll share in John's life as a sailor, his coming to Australia, and how he met the woman who would become his wife, and how all of this led him to being on ships that visited the Antarctica. John's story is of a life and a lifestyle no longer with us, and as he shares it, we can't help but be drawn into his life, a life at sea. Here I am, talking with John. First of all, thank you very much for coming back on to Listen to Older Voices. I think we spoke about 12 months ago. But look, for the people who missed that program, can we start off by asking you how old you are?
I'm 84 next month.
And how long have you been in Australia?
54 years.
54. So the majority of your life is now in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you, of course, you were born overseas.
I was born in Denmark, in Copenhagen.
How did you get into becoming involved in seafare?
Well, all, as you well know, and you heard about the Viking.
Of course.
We all sort of lived next to the water, and when you live in a small flat, and all your mates around you, they disappear and go to sea and all the rest of it. Well, I had an uncle and a dad that had been out sailing, and so I chose that way. Joined up with an old shipping company called Lowitson, and as a cadet, and I was there with them for 4 months, and then a training ship after that, and then 4 years out as a normal AB on various ship all around the world, and then came back home and went to the school of nav and spent 2.5 years there.
What was the purpose of going to the school? What did that provide you with?
Well, that it's a navigation school, right? So
okay.
We call it the school of nav, and you just learn how to navigate type of thing, because as a normal sailor, well, the only thing you learn is just to go out and chip the rust and put a bit of paint on and clean up the hatches and this sort of thing, and just normally handle the gear around the place and tie up the ships, and then otherwise just have a look at the girls in town.
When you first went to sea, did you have it in your mind to make that a career, or when you first went, it was just something that you think you did because you were that age and you were a boy? Or did you really want to be a seaman from a very young age?
I always wanted to be a sailor. I always wanted to be a captain. And I had a very good childhood friend that went to sea and did exactly the same thing as I wanted to do. So he was 2 years ahead of me, and he showed me the rope, where to start and what to do. And
right.
That's how I got in to be a cadet first, and then went on a training ship, the old square rigger. And that just came from him. He was always my mentor. He's my good old mate back home in the old days. Fortunately, he passed away now, but he was...
Now, you mentioned square rigger. For people listening who aren't familiar with the sea, we're talking about sailing ships there, aren't we?
Well, we're sailing. In those days, to be a master, you have to have 2 years, 1 year of training on a sailing ship. And we had, or they still have a training ship in Denmark called the Denmark. And in those days, we spent 11 and a half months there. And we cruised in the Danish water first. And then the next thing was that we had a trip across the Atlantic to America, and visit various ports over there in the West Indies, up to Bermuda, and then we had the quickest run back to Europe in the Atlantic, where there was a gale blowing us the whole way. So that was a fantastic trip.
That sounds like something out of an adventure book.
Well, you don't think too much about that when you're 18 or 19 years old, you know.
No.
You just take it for granted, whatever happens around you. And we were 105 boys, and it was a great experience. I just wish I could do it again today.
of course. I guess there must have been, especially crossing the Atlantic, there must have been moments of some pretty rough seas.
Oh, yeah. Well, the waves were up to 30 metre high, and you sort of surf down on the big waves.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. When you stood up in at the bowsprit, well, the aftermath was actually, if you can imagine that you slide down the wave, well, the next wave was actually 10 metre above the aftermath. So it was quite horrific, quite an experience.
Did it scare you?
No, not really. Why would you be scared? You had people that were in charge of the whole thing and knew what they were doing.
Right. And
we were just learning.
What about sea legs? Did you have those straight away, or did you have to work to get your sea legs?
Oh, no, no. You get the sea legs pretty quick. The main thing about getting the sea leg is really just not to be frightened. People always maintain that they can't stomach the movement of the ship. But that's mainly caused, in my humble opinion, mainly caused by the fact that people are frightened. If you're not frightened of anything, well, then you don't get the seasickness.
Right.
Well, that doesn't mean I didn't get seasick. Yes, I got seasick in the beginning, but but that was in the Baltic Sea on a little coaster. But that was mainly caused by the fact that the sea in the Baltic Sea is, I don't know, it's unusual. Very, very short and vapid waves, you know. And when you're in a little boat, a little 60-tonner, well, then you're up and down like a yo-yo.
Throwing you around quite a bit. Right.
Yeah.
What was it like for you as a young man visiting all what these foreign countries? Was that an adventure in itself? Did you ever get off the boat?
Oh, yeah, we got off the boat everywhere. It was interesting in as much as I spent 18 months on Tangas, and when we went up to the Persian Gulf and loaded up there, well, you couldn't go ashore because the only thing that happened there was there's only sand, only a desert there, so the
not
only thing
see.
We could do was just to hook up the pipe to the shore. And by the time you came to Europe, to Rotterdam and Hamburg and this sort of place, or any place where we had to discharge the crude oil, well, it was too far into town, so we never got off the ships, actually.
Right. Some people say it's very lonely life at sea. Did you find that?
We had books and this sort of thing. No, you had boys to talk to on a Norwegian ship. I spent 2 years on Norwegian ships. There was no grog and this sort of thing, you know.
No.
So it's on one particular ship, we had a couple of Finns. And when we were in America or South America one time, these two guys, they managed to get hold of what we call it, Metalnet spirits, and then they had a little bit of shoe polish, so they made their own drink out of that one.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a terrible escapade, but the Finns have always been known well for sort of needing that because of the cold weather they got up in Finland.
Sure.
But that was the only... No. In regards to loneliness, well, I can't remember if we have been in a situation where there was any need to sit down and cry and get homesick or anything like that. No, never.
There's many sayings about the sea, but another one that comes to mind was that sailors have a girl in every port.
Oh, yeah, but that is a must. But not when you're on a tanker, you know. Oh, no, it's, I suppose, the main reason for why the young boys, they want to go to sea, because they're going to see all the girls around them. the world, but it doesn't happen that way.
No, it doesn't.
No. It's very, very hard. And, well, you can go to the whorehouses and all this sort of thing. And the main thing is to go and learn something about what is happening in other places. See as much as you can, and we visit museums and, well, I don't know whether I don't want to make a better boy out of things than I really was, but I didn't miss anything.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with 84-year-old John Larson, and John is remembering his early life as a sailor.
So you went and studied and obviously passed to get your navigation papers. What happened then?
Well, I joined up with the company where I started as a cadet, and went out. The first job was as a second mate on an old coaster. An old steamer.
Right.
The ship participated in the invasion of Normandy. And before I joined up, of course, she's been torpedoed twice.
Wow.
And she was bumped another time. So that was a dear old steamer. I loved that old ship.
Would have had real character, I could imagine.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yes.
Well, we used to sail between Finland and UK with paper pulp and newsprint. And when we docked in the small places in the UK, we tied up in a little port. And what they used to have there was, of course, the old water cranes.
Right.
Which was actually run by the pressure from the water. And as the tide went out of the port, well, we were just sitting in the mud. So to be able to keep the boilers going, well, we were hooked up to the water supply, which fit the boilers with fresh water. So
right.
It was all, I mean, this is history. Nobody will, today, I don't think anybody will really remember or know anything about what happened, but that was the way in those days.
But even more reason why it's important that your story gets told, because of the fact it is becoming history now, isn't it? I mean, we just don't work that way anymore.
No, this is quite true, but I don't know how. Maybe it's important that you tell things like this, but on the other hand, well, I personally don't know it, but is there really people out there that are interested in hearing old stories like that? I don't know.
Well, all I can say is this program's been going now for 17 years. Mm. And that's some indication that there's a lot of people out there listening, because if you don't get listeners, you don't have a program.
No, this is quite true.
Okay.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
So, roughly what time in your life did you sort of move out of the Atlantic European sailing and start coming round to the Pacific?
Well, the last trip in the Pacific, that was as an AB and the biggest in those days, the biggest shipping company in Denmark, was called the East Asiatic Company, which actually had Royal involvement. And the old company had a great big fleet. Unfortunately, it went bankrupt in the end. But that was my trip up to all the ports, the India, Calcutta, Rangoon, Singapore, Hong Kong, up to Japan, and right up to the northern end of Japan, and then back down to the Philippines, and then back home. And that was the last trip. I had to get off the ship in Hamburg to be able to get back home and start the training on the school at a particular day.
Right. So you did that trip still as a young man?
Right. Yeah.
And then you went and did your studies.
Yeah, well, I was 20 when I went to school there.
But that was quite, and we talked about it being an adventure going down across the Atlantic, but coming up through India and Japan for a young man, that must have opened your eyes up to the world a bit.
that was a great experience, yes, it really was. I love the Far East. It's marvellous places.
Do you have a favourite country in the Far East? Would you just like it all?
No. I always found that the first time you came to any port, well, then you learned the tricks and you found your way around, and then you were looking forward to coming back the second time, and then you knew where to do and what to do, sure, and this sort of thing. But by the time you came back the third time, you'd done it all, and not interested.
Not interested anymore.
But there wasn't any girlfriend I wanted to come back to.
This time I actually wasn't thinking about girls. I was thinking more about the fact that it's so different to Europe.
Oh, definitely.
You know, it must have been...
In those days, Hong Kong and Singapore, that was in the real good old days, in the colonial days, that was really lovely. Mm. I've been to Hong Kong and Singapore many times afterwards, but I don't particularly like it anymore. And a funny story is that I met a Chinaman that came from Hong Kong, and I asked him whether he goes back very often. He said, no, I'll never go back. Right. Don't like it anymore.
Right.
And with the modern Western world society or way of life, it doesn't really fit in. That's not what I can remember.
Right.
So, it's the good old days.
Did the good old days include a trip to Australia?
I spent 18 months on the west coast of America as the chief officer on one of the company's ships over there, and came back again. This is after this little story I'm going to tell you about. And the company sent me to the south again on the Taylor Dan, and I came out and we had a load of China clay from UK down to Burnie. And the agent invited the old man and the chief engineer and me out for dinner, and we were sitting at a hotel down in Burnie. And up in the other end of the great big dining room, there was a beautiful lady, a red-headed lady, sitting up there all on her own. And that was the beginning of my life coming back to Australia.
That beautiful red-headed woman became your wife?
Well, that was my wife for 50 years.
Name, please?
Audrey Ann. Yeah. No, I didn't like the name Audrey, so she never had any other name than Ann. So to me, she was Ann, but to the rest of the family, it was Audrey.
So for you, it was Ann.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
How long did it take for Anne to make a connection with you? Was it pretty quick, or did you have to?
No. That was quite an experience. But I wish the old girl would be here, because she can tell the story about how we managed to really get together to come down to the ship where we had a little party after. But how she got out of the hotel without anybody knowing is a story, and I'm not going to tell that one.
Oh, okay. We'll just have to use our imaginations.
But a little bit of help from the lady at the reception, who was a girlfriend of my wife, it all worked out well.
It all worked out. Yeah. So how long did you and Anne...
Well, it took another 2 years I just got out of a divorce, and I wasn't really in a situation where I wanted to match up with a lady again and still be out at sea, you know.
Of course.
So we wrote to each other for nearly 2 years. And one day I was down the South Pole with the Macadam as a chief officer again, and there was a telegram that Anne had decided to come to Copenhagen. Would it be all right? Well, I, of course, had to make the big decision. So I said yes. And there was nowhere. Oh, I didn't have a flat or anything like that. I had a little holiday shack, and that was all. So I had to get hold of Mum and say, well, can you put up with this lady that's coming? And because I won't be home before she gets there. So she came home to Copenhagen, and I said goodbye to the ship down in Antwerp, and the company sent her, believed me. And we spent 2 months in Denmark, and we still loved each other, and that was the end of that. So I just decided, well, it's no good being a sailor in Denmark and having a girl that can't speak Danish and a family that don't speak English.
That was a bit interesting.
That was a bit of a problem. So the decision was made to come to Australia and see what happens.
Right.
So that was when I came out here.
Well, that's a very interesting story.
Well, it was, but...
And did that basically finish your sea adventures?
Oh, no, not really, because I, when I came here, I was supposed to start up with my... Well, I did start up with my brother-in-law, who was in real estate in those days, but I don't know. As a sailor, I'm not a salesman or anything like that, so that didn't quite work out. We built the house together, and I sold it, and then I decided that wasn't really my cup of tea.
Sure.
So my old mother-in-law, she suggested I went down and talk to the, what we call now, the, what do they call them? Centrelink. Because Mum was in at this particular moment, well, apart from having a little Volkswagen that cost me £190, we were running rapidly, running out of money. My wife had a job again. So Mum said, do you go down and see if you can get some money out of them? So I went down and said, well, no, we don't do that. We can give you a job. So I got a job as a painter.
A painter?
Yeah, well, they turned around and asked me what I could do. I said, well, I don't know. Can you paint? I said, yeah, I can paint. So I joined up with a fella in Dillydale that was running this little painting joint. And there was three of us, and we just got sent out. I think we did Mount Malency, Delancey, there's down to Mount Evelyn, you know. Mount Delancey, I think it's called. Anyway, that was one of the jobs. And the next job was, of course, at the old Warburton School up here, which was only a little three-bedroom house with a toilet on the outside. It had to be painted. So I'm sitting on the back of this shack, scraping off all the old paint. And the boss came along and he said to me, well, listen, on the way back home, John, could you call in to me? I said, yeah, I'll do that, not knowing what was happening. But one of my mates there, painting it, he asked me one day what my background was, and I didn't want to tell him I was an old bloody sailor or anything like that. So I said, well, I'm really a chemist, I said. Oh, are you? Yeah. But the government won't allow me to work here as a chemist, so I got to start somewhere. So by the time I got down to the Lilydale to meet the boss again, he just gave me my paycheck, and that was the end of that.
Oh, goodness.
So in the meantime, of course, I haven't told anybody, but I got hold of the Danish consul, which I met prior to my first ship, the tailor out here, Mr. Christensen. He was the one that started the Peter's Ice Cream.
Right.
So I went and had a chat with him, was shown the factory and all the rest of it. Well, I don't know. He was thinking about what he could do. So a couple of days later, he waked me up and asked me if I could come down, because he got a Danish ship owner there. They want to say hello to me. So I went in and had lunch with them, and the next thing is I got a job up on the coast of Queensland.
Goodness
me. A little coast up there.
That would have been an easy job for you, though, wouldn't it?
Cause oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's right. But you're back on the sea.
The sea again, and only at sea for 2 or 3 days up to around Cape York and down to the Gulf and this sort of thing, and then back to Cairns and Townsville again.
Yeah.
And most of the time my wife was with me.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah.
Join John and I next week for tales of him working on a cattle boat between Australia and Japan. But it's how all this leads him to Antarctica and John's amazing stories and observations of Antarctica that make this story one not to be missed. That's next week, John Larson, on Listen to Older Voices.